Hello, welcome to the 92nd Over the Monster podcast. This is Matt Corey. I am in Portland, Oregon, and I am incredibly honored to have an awesome guest on. It's Will Leach. He is the author of the books God Save the Fan and Are We Winning? He's written other books than that, too. He founded Deadspin, and he's currently the senior writer for Sports on Earth, and he hosts the daily podcast, The Will Leach Experience. Hey, Will. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to do it. I'm very excited to. I'm literally. I don't know when you're going to be posting this. I'm assuming quickly. The World Series starts in
it's timely.
8 hours. Yeah. So as soon as I get off this podcast, I'm actually going to. If I get off this podcast, I don't mean to imply that. Like as soon as I am taken over. As soon as you release me into the wild, after
that's
I,
right.
These chains.
I'll lift the door on your cage, and you can run free.
Exactly. And if I return to you, I was yours all along. I'll be going to Fenway. I'm going to Fenway as soon as we get this over. So I'm very, very excited for both this and to go to Fenway today. Though I'm a little worried about the weather. So it's supposed to start raining about like 7 or 7:30, I'm told. But it's supposed to rain, but it's supposed to like ease up about 9. So I think we're just going to get a delay. But this is the first time. I've been to the World Series. This is my third World Series I've ever been to. But this is the first one I went to was in 2006 with my family as a Cardinals fan. And so then I was just as a fan, drunk and freezing, the whole thing. And then in 2009, I covered the series for New York Magazine when the Yankees were there. Well, this is the first time I've ever, sat in the press box for a Cardinals game and like really had a full bore. I'm on the road. I'm organizing plane tickets depending on how, where games go. Like this is the closest I've ever come to impersonating a beat reporter. I have no idea how they do it, man. I really don't. I'm already exhausted and we're not even to game one. Yeah. And I'm just completely wiped out. I'm not a road warrior at all. I'm completely beaten down already and we haven't even started. And some guys do this 6 months out of the year. It's really kind of amazing. I'm not complaining. I can't wait. But man, this would erode a man. I understand. It makes me understand a lot of widespread mainstream baseball writing already. When I'm like, oh, they're just exhausted and unhappy. So it explains a lot.
It is impressive when someone can write about the same topic 162 times over the year and not be boring or repetitive or plain stupid, and to do that with all the traveling and all the other things that they have to go through. So,
they're running about players who actively dislike them and don't want to talk to them right. And have no respect for what they do whatsoever.
You see that I didn't even mention that, and that's shows that I don't.
And then they go, and then they go and write a story, and everyone says like, "You're an idiot, just buy it." Like it's just like I feel so lucky that I do my thing, but like the idea of that kind of travel and that kind of job, I have a lot of respect for the guys that I don't mean to mock them. I have a lot of respect for them. They do it because obviously you get to go to baseball games and listen. I had to cover the financial services industry. I answered phones for Telemundo. Like I've had some crappy jobs, but so I'm certainly not complaining. I think that those are worse jobs than that. But man, it makes you certainly the more time I'm only occasionally in press boxes, but the more time that I do it, it always explains a lot to me.
I should say before we get into the World Series that you and I actually have met once before.
Are you behind me?
No.
Okay, just to make sure. You said you were in Portland, but I wasn't sure.
No, I really am in Portland. I wasn't lying.
Okay.
Yeah, no. It's like, how did I not hear it?
I'm in a hotel. How did you get in here?
It's magic. No, you were doing a book tour for God Save the Fan, and you were at the Penn Bookstore in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
And you were doing a reading, and you did it one part was interactive, and it was the John Rocker part, mm-hmm. Where you interviewed Rocker. This is one of my favorite things ever, and so it was you called for people to volunteer, and nobody did, and you said something about Philadelphia being crap or something if nobody volunteered. So I raised my hand, and I went up, and I got to read your part.
Oh, so you played me. Oh,
I played you.
I'm going to go. All the pictures of every one of those readings are on Flickr. I haven't used Flickr in years, but but I still have all of them. So I guarantee you there are pictures of you up there doing that, because that was a heavily documented book tour. That was fun. That was the very end, too. I was getting down to the end on that one.
Yeah.
And I did Atlanta, and I was this close. Rocker was going to come and play himself. He was actually going to come and play me, because I had perfected his part.
Right.
And,
yeah, you had that down.
Yeah. So he had because the interview was – I did an interview with John Rocker and his African-American bodybuilder girlfriend – not boyfriend. Heavens, Rocker. it was a fun thing. I think you can find video of it. I think someone recorded one of them. I did in San Francisco, I think. And it was a really fun time. He was actually, because he actually tends to have a better sense of humor about this stuff than you would think, which is to say, he has one at all.
Right.
So he was up for doing it, but then I think there was a scheduling conflict, and by that scheduling conflict, I think he realized, I actually have like millions of dollars. Like, I don't need to have like this idiot make fun of me, because I don't have to do this, because screw off.
Anyway, so I got to play you and played Rocker, so that was fun. Anyway,
that was spectacular.
If you have a picture, you should send it to me, because I would.
I will. I guarantee you, I do. I'll look for it after this podcast.
All right, so we're 6 minutes in, and we have yet to mention the World Series, which I feel like is maybe my fault, but. You are, I hesitate to use this term, but I think I've heard someone else use it. The preeminent Cardinal fan? Do you have business cards and stuff?
I think I always assume that's John Hamm. I feel like John Hamm, if John Hamm were active on Twitter, I think everyone would be John Hamm, like John Rocker, I have millions of dollars. Why do I need to deal with you people at all? I feel like John Hamm is the John Hamm, because it used to be, I feel like when you look at like quote unquote celebrity baseball fans, you can usually tell who they are by who they have to narrate the World Series video. Uh-huh. Like when they win, and like in 2006, like who did the Red Sox in 2004 and 2007? Do you know?
No, I'm sure Ben Affleck was involved at some
point. Yeah, probably. And because we had Billy Bob Thornton in 06. Then John Hamm did it in 2011. And during all this Cardinal hate that's come up over the last couple of weeks, I like had this incredible urge, because you know the internet loves John Hamm just as a rule.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
everybody loves John Hamm.
Well, his last name is Hamm.
Yeah, of course. And like, it's funny. I actually always assumed that the M's actually go on for infinity. There's like a line over the two M's, and they just go on forever. But just for the sake of, like, I'm sure the Actors Guild was like, we can't actually have the M's go on to infinity. So let's just have it two. And then, as people have years and years and years, it's hard to format the line over the M's, so they've just gone with two.
Well, it's like anyway, Red Fox. Like Red
yeah,
Fox.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. So that was just like for pornography purposes. but anyway, so. John Hamm did it to that. So I wanted to like keep showing pictures of John Hamm in all of his Cardinal stuff to show like, look, you know, like you like John Hamm. You can't love, you can't hate the Cardinals.
You look, must like John everything Hamm. John Hamm. Yeah, you must like everything John Hamm likes.
Yeah, he's John Hamm. And he's like a very vocal Cardinals fan. My favorite thing that John Hamm did was that there's a yearly thing every year in Kansas City where Jason Sudeikis and Paul Rudd do like this charity event at a Royals game. I guess they're both Royals fans. And they invited John Hamm to come, but they said, you have to wear a Royals jersey. Like, that's just the thing. We all have to be in the same uniforms. We have to do it. So John Hamm actually went and specifically got a personalized Dickinger 85 jersey, Royals jersey. So I'm like, okay, you are actually a real fan. So I'll grant that.
Either that or a giant dick.
He's upset. Yeah. Listen, the Cardinal. Listen, I think we can all agree. Cardinal fans have had it really hard.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you why everyone all of a sudden dislikes Cardinals fans. I mean, I don't tend to follow. I don't know. I guess there's not a ton of them on Twitter that that are really vocal. I follow you obviously, but you're not. I don't know. You're on Twitter. You're not like, yay, Cardinals all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think that Cardinal fans are not inherently combative. Is probably the best. And obviously there are exceptions. And
sure.
Apparently you know, this is also the postseason of finding jerks and having them stand in for a whole fan base. That's another thing that, Twitter, that's the worst part about Twitter, is that, like, we find someone that's a jerk and, like, say, like, I think there's that Best Fan St. Louis Twitter that they just find, like, the random Cardinal fans that are racist jerks and, like, see, aha, told you. Yeah.
Like, no, they do that for Red Sox fans, too. I mean,
literally do that for, like, nuns. You know, like, I guarantee you there's a nun out there that's thinking something horrible.
All nuns are horrible, awful people. Yeah.
It just seems like the laziest. This is something that even I actually found most of Deadspin's mockery of the Cardinals pretty funny, particularly Drew's thing, which is really funny. I thought there were diminishing returns on those, but I thought Drew's was the funniest one. But certainly one of the dumb posts that Deadspin will do sometimes is the look how people reacted to insert name of major. Basically they'll just search in. You know, you'll see Obama's speech. And they'll type in Obama and then a terrible word. And they're like, look at all the jerks on Twitter. Like, yeah, it's Twitter. Like, you know, this is – like, I'm not sure what we're illuminating here. So certainly, you know, I think that getting back to the original question, I think a lot of the Cardinal fans, I think it's pretty normal actually, you know, that the Cardinals are just around all the time. Yeah. Like, they've been in the postseason. Like, this is the – it's been 2003, 2004, 2005, 2011, 2012, 2013, they've been the National League Championship Series. That's going to get people sick of you. Find people. And particularly, you know, also, too, I've written about this as well. One of the reasons is the Cardinals have had this tendency during these playoffs to beat other teams' favorite teams. Like, and to say that, like, the 2006 Mets, those Mets were beloved. That was a really fun team. Clearly, since they never did anything after that, they kind of degraded after that. That's the team that everyone thinks, oh, we should have had that one. And the Cardinals beat them. There's actually several teams like that. The 2012 Nationals, the 2013 Pirates, the 2011 Brewers, 2011 Rangers, 2006 Tigers. Like, there's a lot of those teams that had their year and then the Cardinals beat them. So that you're actually just adding a collective number of people together that also are angry at the Cardinals. So I think when you don't like something or you're just viscerally, if just because you're tired of them and you don't want to cheer for them anymore, you don't want to see them anymore, I think you'll, there's a natural tendency, particularly online, to kind of caricature the fan base and what you dislike or dislike about them. And go after them in that way. So I think we've certainly seen that. It bothered me last year a little bit more than it did this year, just because I was so surprised by it. Because, you know, when you're a fan of a team, I'm sure you know this as a Red Sox fan, when you're a fan of a team, you follow them all the time and you really love them. So to you, they're always underdogs.
Right.
Because they're always underdogs. Like, you might know theoretically, okay, I know that they're a better team than the Astros, so they should win this game. But they're your guys, you know? So, like, you watch them all the time, so you never think of them as any sort of lumbering monolith, overdog, as the case may be. But when the rest of the world sees that way, I wasn't used to that last year. I was ready for it this year. And it was more vitriol this year, but also the Cardinals of the World Series, so who cares?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, screw it. it's the rare season when you know, sports team that you follow closely makes it to the championship, and that's a special thing and definitely to be cherished. So, you can't let the haters on Twitter, or I hate to use that word haters. That's so, I don't know.
Whatever. Haters going hate.
Yeah, it's truth. it's interesting because you are a professional writer, and I know a number of professional writers, and a lot of them who cover sports for a living have found that their fandom has diminished over time. I guess just because, you know, their hobby became a job, and that's the way that kind of works. I'm not quite on that level, but that hasn't happened to me. Judging from afar, it doesn't seem that that's happened to you either. Do you have any insight into why that might be?
Yeah, I just, you know, to me, if I'm not rooting for the Cardinals, there's just something fundamentally different about me. Like I've never, I have to say secretly, I always either think that people that started out cheering for teams and say that they lost it along the years as it became more professional, I feel like they're either lying or it's deeply, deeply sad. or they were never really that big of a fan in the first place. To me, you know, so much, and this is a lot of what Are We Winning is about, so much of fandom, you know, it's wrapped up in who I am. You know, this is a central tenet of my life since I was four. Yeah. You know, so the idea that it's been an organizing principle, like, you know, for in a lot of ways, I've you know, semi-joked that, you know, in my family, the Cardinals are church. You know, I mean, like, you plan that, you know, they're a rite in a lot of ways, an R-I-T-E rite. And in that, like, you know, you plan, like, I plan visits to see my family around Cardinal games, and they do the same to me. Like, it is a structural fact in our lives. And I think it is for like not just the Cardinals, but I mean for teams across the country and fan, when you're really a fan and you're really devoted, it just becomes a part of your life. So the idea that because I write about sports professionally, which again was an accident, and it still feels like an accident, like, you know, the idea that I'm going to give that up for this is like, that's not realistic. You know, that's just, I would be lying to my readers. And so, you know, I understand that, you know, we're going to find out once I sit in this press box for the next 7 days, because how that actually turns out. I like to think of myself as still a halfway professional, but, like, you know, if anyone comes over to, like, how you feeling if the Cardinals are down 5-0, I'm not going to say, well, I hope I have a good story for it. I'm going to be miserable.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, to me, you know, I feel like I don't understand losing that. I just don't. And I recognize, you know, part of rooting for cheering for a baseball team is dumb. You know, like, not only are you, forget that rooting for laundry, you're rooting for a massive corporation that just lends your money.
Right,
I know that it's illogical. Like, I know that, and I can understand why someone is the closer and closer to the game would intellectually recognize that and say, oh, why would I, like, this, I now that I've seen that Yadier Molina you know, has horrible earwax problems, or, you know, which is, I don't think actually necessarily that awful of an offense, but, you know, or now that John Jay flips me off behind my back every time I walk through the locker room, I can understand, you know, why that would be difficult to hang on to that, which is why, frankly, what I've tried to do in my career is I try to avoid that situation. I don't want to, I don't know about you, but I don't really want to know a lot about the Cardinals, like, individually. Like, you know, I don't really have, I don't want any autograph memorabilia. It's never really been about that.
Yeah.
It's really been about the connection for, you know, I mean, owners will go. Eventually, Bill DeWitt's not going to be the owner of the Cardinals. Eventually, Mike Matheny's not going to be the manager of the Cardinals. Eventually, Yadier Molina is not going to be the catcher for the Cardinals. Eventually, they may play in a different stadium. They may have a different name. They could change everything. But the fans are the one thing that doesn't change. The one thing that's you know, say, like, Ozzie Smith didn't, because of a fight with Tony La Russa, didn't talk to the Cardinals organization for 20 years. Like, Ozzie Smith could get separated from the Cardinals.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, you know, for me, that the fandom is, it's more than really just the Cardinals or the players or the uniforms. It's really like a structural thing in my life, and it's not something that I can ever imagine getting rid of, whether I'm writing about them or not. But again, we'll see when I get when a big burly Boston security guard drags me out by my ear. After I scream, I inadvertently scream after a Pete Cosma triple. Actually, the one that's the least likely thing of all of those things happening was a Pete Cosma triple.
I was going to say, I think if Pete Cosma triples, I think lots of people will scream. You won't be in the
All right.
Yeah. I don't know how you pull that off either. I mean, sitting in a press box and, you know, something you're really excited about watching that, and something that you're really excited about happens that, you know, is positive, you know, for your team, and you're supposed to, like, sit there quietly and glumly and I don't know, pick dirt out of your fingernails or something. I'm with you. I don't know how that works, but maybe.
No, listen, I understand. I get those people that are going to be in this press box with me tonight. Like, I'm going to, like, they're doing their jobs. Like,
yeah, totally, totally.
I respect that, and I'm not going to, like, I might occasionally, like, kick the ground, like, really hard and silently and bite my knuckle or something. But, you know, they got, you know, I'm not going to be a jerk with it. I realize that this is my burden to bear. This is my thing to deal with, and not theirs. But
it does feel like a burden sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, certainly rooting,
it's totally, you know, by choice, but
I know. Forget that, the writing aspect of doing it professionally. I don't know about you, but, like, if you were to take a video of me watching a Cardinals postseason game, I would not look like someone that's doing something fun. Look like this is my diversion or this is my relaxation. I would, you know, I'd be losing my mind, you know. So, it's stressful. It's exhausting. It's not even really. I don't know about you, but I tend to not find it fun until it's over and they've won.
a lot of times it's not fun, and that that has occurred to me, and it doesn't stop me, which is weird. I mean, I remember in 2004, I was living in Philadelphia, and you know the World Series was going on, or I guess actually this refers to the ALCS against the Yankees, and all the drama that unfolded there. And I don't recall exactly how this particular situation occurred, but it was pretty cold out. The windows in my apartment were wide open, and I was walking around in shorts without a shirt on, and I got quite cold. But the Red Sox were doing well, and so I did not close the windows, and I did not put a shirt on, and that was stupid. But but it worked.
I understand. I understand, man. That's going to be the weirdest thing. I don't know exactly how I'm going to get myself in weird contortions. My leg has to go behind my back.
I can't switch seats.
I'm not sure how that's gonna work, you know. So in case they happen to yell blah 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 after every pitch, like just because the last one was a hit. You never know what's gonna be required of you.
It's true.
In the postseason. So
you don't know. You don't know.
I'll try to pull it together.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish you luck, and I look forward to reading what you write about this. So as for the actual baseball, I mean, this is as close a series in terms of talent as I can really recall. I mean, I think you can really pick things apart and say, well, you know, the Cardinals maybe have an advantage, you know, at base running because Baseball Prospectus has a base running run stat that says that the Cardinals are the second best base running team in baseball over the course of 162 games. And you know, the Cardinals have Wainwright and the Red Sox have Lester, and Wainwright's a little bit better or a lot better depending on how you see it. I don't know. I just taking the totality of both teams into account, I find it hard to pick a winner. And so I have to ask you, Will, what are the Cardinals not good at?
Hitting shortstop and defense are really the main thing. The Cardinals defense is not good. And I think that I think it's going to be less of a problem at Fenway just because the outfield's smaller, and I mean, they're not going to be able to field that wall, but nobody can, but you guys. So yeah. I don't know if that matters.
I'm smiling right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But the defense is an issue. You know, John Jay in particular in center field has been a problem all year. He had a good year. He seems to have regressed somehow defensively since the last year. And he had a particularly tough NLCS. He caused a lot of problems for the Cardinals at Dodger Stadium. So the defense is not great. They've jerry-rigged their defense to fit the lineup in a lot of ways. Carpenter is a perfectly fine second baseman, but Freeze is a below-average third baseman. Cosmo's an okay third shortstop. He can't hit at all. He's literally the throw him off-speed pitches to lower to low and outside. He will swing it. There's no reason Pete Cosmo should ever put wood on a bat ever in the series. So he's the most automatic out. There should be a card. I wonder if the Cardinals have considered the notion of using the DH for the shortstop when they're at Fenway. I think it's worth considering. So he's such a bad hitter. But he's a perfectly fine defensive shortstop. He's the only reason he's in the lineup. But really defensively, the Cardinals, other than Molina and Cosmo, are really not a good defensive team. And so, you know, that's going to be an issue. I feel like that's a definite that's an issue with the Cardinals. And also, you know, we've kind of forgotten a little bit because the Cardinals won game 6-9 nothing, but they really have not hit much in this postseason at all. You know, they've Matt Adams has had a couple big hits, but really has not hit the ball that well. The same with it's the same with Matt Holliday. He's had a couple big hits, but generally speaking, you know, they're not the thing the Cardinals were doing all year. They're a patient team, but they really this is a team that wins through batting average. they're a contact team. You know, I think if there's one major advantage that they have, it's that, you know, compared to 1982 numbers, they strike out a lot. But compared to today, they don't strike out that much at all. I think that's the real kind of quiet reason behind their historically high batting average with runs on scoring position. They just don't strike out that much. They put the ball in play a lot. And I think that is an advantage. And I think another advantage the Cardinals have in this series is, you know, the one guy I'm really curious about is Waka, because, you know, Waka is still kind of an incomplete pitcher. He has a curveball that he throws 10 or 11 times a game. It only works as a change of pace pitch. It's just loopy and kind of – it's not really that tight of a pitch. Yep. But, you know, the thing that you guys do really well is, you know, you wait out pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are patient. You guys, and a guy like Waka, who's a strike thrower, like that's his thing. Like he throws strikes. You know, he keeps you off balance, but like he powered, like he's not a pick guy. Like I'm very concerned about how Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly are going to do against the Red Sox, because they both throw hard, but they kind of nibble and they mess around. And to me, that's a worry, because I feel like that's a lot. Those are guys that you guys are going to have a lot of success against. To me, I think a lot of it does come down to Waka. I think if Waka seems to have the type of approach that would work well against you, because he throws a lot of strikes, but you know, again, he's also making his 12th career start.
Yeah, so, isn't he like 22 or something?
Yeah, I mean, he was just drafted in June 2012. It's funny too, because when he was drafted, the big thing was the Cardinals were very conservative. Sure, he'll be ready soon. He'll be ready sooner than a lot of pitchers, but he doesn't have ace stuff. And then he showed up and was like, "Holy crap, who did we draft?"
Well, I mean, he didn't used to throw 98 in the sixth inning, right? I mean, I'm sorry.
There's a lot. The Cardinals, like, this is, you know, if there's a reason to be annoyed by the Cardinals, I think it is they have these guys who are good that somehow through the Cardinals organization, the Cardinal way, if you will, they get a lot better. Like Alan Craig, you know, Alan Craig was a good hitter who became a great one when he got to the majors. Matt Carpenter is the best example of this. You know, he didn't reach the majors until he was about to turn, like he was 25, almost 26. And then he hit a good batting eye. He was kind of known for a good approach, but no one in the world could have possibly seen this coming at all. The only reason he was even given a starting spot this year is because the Cardinals desperately needed a second baseman. So, you know, the notion, you know, they have a lot of those guys. Joe Kelly all of a sudden got to the majors and started throwing 95. He'd never done that before. So certainly, you know, if to be irritated by the Cardinals, I think it's stuff like that. It's like it's guys that shouldn't be great and get to the Cardinals and play really well. So, and it's helped. You know, my piece for Sports on Earth today is actually about Albert Pujols. And I know the Cardinal fans don't like talking about Albert Pujols because you know, but basically Albert Pujols is like. But what happened is in 2006, the Cardinals decided, listen, obviously we're going to keep Pujols. He's our stand-the-man. We're going to have Pujols forever. So what we have to do is we have to completely overhaul our farm system. Walt Jocketty liked to trade for players late in their career, and he liked the veteran guys, like Mark Mulder. Trade Dan Heron. And it was a terrible trade. Dan Heron for like a couple weeks of Mark Mulder.
Yeah.
And but like, you know, basically they reconstructed the entire organization with the idea that the only way we're going to be able to afford to keep Albert is if we have a bunch, if he is surrounded by young, cheap talent. So that's what they gave Jeff Luhnow, who is now, of course, the general manager of the Houston Astros. They gave him so much leeway with the farm system. And as my column points out, there's like the Cardinals, like everybody is all guys that Luhnow drafted in his 6 years of drafting. But as it turned out, they actually got lucky twice because then Pujols left, and then they were able to once he left, and then, of course, now it's fallen off, which, for the record, don't let the Cardinals ever act like, oh, yeah, we knew it. Like, they wanted Pujols. Like, they wanted Pujols to stay. So, but then you're able to extend Wainwright. You're able to extend Molina. You're able to get Beltran. This is what's happened. The Cardinals made a plan just to keep Pujols. And then when he left, all of a sudden they had all this flexibility, and that's why they're in good shape, not just in this series, but for the next few years going forward.
That is, it's quite a story of, I don't know, it sounds like, it sounds like a mistake, but then...
Like, I really think that in their heart of hearts, they never thought Pujols was leaving. Like, they just didn't. They knew that they needed to give him a lot of money. Like, they knew they couldn't lowball him. But I really don't think they ever seriously thought that he was going to leave. And so, which is why they had apportioned they reconstructed their whole system just to be able to, because if you look at that 2016, the second best hitter on that team is Chris Duncan. Like, you know, like that 2016, like there was nothing, like the starting lineup 2007, Pujols was batting third and Khalil Green was batting fourth.
Wow.
Like, there was nothing around Albert. They clearly had to make a change. So they reconstructed everything. One of my favorite stats about this is in 2005, the Cardinals were listed as having the worst farm system in baseball. This year, they were listed as having the best, and they won two World Series in that time. Yeah. Like, we're pretty lucky to be. It's a pretty great time to be a Cardinal fan. And so much of that is because they realize we can't lose Albert, so but we're not going to be able to afford what he wants if we keep farting around with these veteran guys like Mark Mulder and stuff like this. So they completely reconstructed it. And as it turned out, it worked out perfectly. It worked out even better than Albert left.
Well, sometimes some of the, you know, the best deals you make are the deals you didn't make. I mean, you know, the Red Sox famously tried to trade for Alex Rodriguez. Maybe that would have gone really well. Who knows? But
who was the guy that held that up? Who was the third baseman for the Yankees? Are they Mike Camp? Mike? I don't remember. Never mind. But I remember when all that was going down. It was just like, yeah, that was the assumption. Like, it was going to be the Red Sox, and everyone's just going to have to learn to deal with it. And for the record, for what it's worth, like, A-Rod would have been pretty good for you guys.
Oh my God, totally. Yeah, he would have been. He would have been amazing.
Yeah, it's worth noting that, like, it's easy to say now because everything's turned out, but like, A-Rod would have been awesome for the Red Sox.
Oh, totally. He would have been great. No question about it. Things worked out anyway.
Right.
I mean, they were going to trade John Lester, who's starting Game 1 of the World Series. You know, among other things.
Are you guys set up? Do you feel comfortable? Like one nice thing about the Cardinals is that, like, listen, we obviously want to win the World Series this year. It's on. Like, we want it. But, like, Cardinals are going to be good next year, and we're set up to be good for the next few years. How do you feel about it? How are you guys feeling about that?
About the Cardinals or about the Red Sox?
About the Red Sox.
I personally feel pretty good about where the Red Sox are. They have a pretty strong farm system. They've got some – and it's kind of spread out, too. They've got some guys who can hit and play the field and some other guys who can pitch who are going to be ready in the next year or 2 years. They've obviously got a really good major league roster. They got a little lucky this year in terms of injuries, but I think a lot of times when you look at the team that made the World Series, you know, that's obviously a team that didn't get beat up by injuries really badly.
Right.
I think that the state of the organization is pretty strong. You'd have to find a pretty pessimistic fan, though, to talk about the team that's in the World Series and be like, nah, they're gonna suck.
Yeah, this is it. If we don't do it now, they're terrible. That's true.
We're screwed.
That's true. But listen, you know, I felt that about the Cardinals in 06. Like, it clearly felt like a last gasp.
Yeah.
Like, this.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. I did an interview with Jason Fry, who runs the great site Faint and Fear and Flushing. It's a good friend of mine. I did an interview with him on Deadspin the day of Game 7 of that Cardinals-Mets in LCS. And we couldn't agree on – we agreed on some stuff. But the one thing we definitely agreed on was – this was it for the Cardinals, and the Mets were clearly set up to dominate the National League for the next 10 years, and obviously turned out the exact opposite.
Isn't it funny how you can take a point in time and look at it, and everything, all the indicators point in one direction, and you know, you can have such certainty about it, and then 6 months, a year, 2 years later, you look back on it, and you're like, wow, I missed absolutely everything.
Yeah, that's why I try to remember that all this rosy stuff about the Cardinals right now, like, it's possible in 3 years we're like, wow, so after that that tragic arm wrestling disaster with Michael Wacha, Shelby Miller, Carlos Martinez, and Trevor Rosenthal, like, you never know. Like, weird things happen all the time. But certainly, one thing I do like about this series a lot, it's two really smart franchises that are going to be in good shape for a long time. And it wouldn't shock me that this is not the last time they meet in the World Series over the next 10 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I won't force you to make a prediction. I feel like at the end of every podcast that, you know, on the World Series, you have to do a prediction. But I don't – I mean, if you want to, feel free. But I think
– are you doing one?
I did one yesterday on the – I was on the podcast for Productive Outs. That was fun. So I said Red Sox in six, which, you know, that's a homer pick. But
I think it makes sense. I think a lot of it comes down to – I'm really worried about the Lance Lynn, Joe Kelly back into bed. I'm very concerned. Lynn's a better pitcher. But he is exactly the type of pitcher that the Red Sox take to town, and I'm very nervous about that. To me, the Cardinals absolutely have to get one of these first two in Boston. I don't think there's really any question about that. But if they can do that, you know, I can see them with Wainwright. You know, depending on it, really comes down. I really feel like it comes down to Game 6 in a lot of ways, because Game 7 right now, the starter for the Cardinals is scheduled to be Joe Kelly. Which is a concern. I feel like if the Cardinals can get, I feel like game, it's really going to come down to. I know that this is going to come down to. This is great math I'm giving you, but certainly the whether it's coming in 3-2, coming into Boston 3-2, St. Louis or 3-2 Boston, I think it's going to be all the difference there. But I think it's coming back to Boston no matter what happens. These are two pretty solid teams. It's hard to imagine either team wins in St. Louis.
I agree. I think. It's going to go 6-7 games, and that of course means that one of the teams will sweep.
Of course, yeah. and we'll all act like we knew it was coming all along. Yeah.
Sox in three, no,
right.
Well, Will, I don't want to take up any more of your time and keep you from your appointed rounds at Fenway. But has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on the podcast. So thanks for your time.
I had a great time. I'm sorry I talked too much, but it's the World Series, man. I can't wait. I guess I was so free to be a guest because on my podcast, I'm always asking questions of the other person. I felt like, okay, I'm just going to spew on this one. So
Perfect.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, man. And good luck to again. And I know the Cardinal fans, for whatever reason, everyone's mad at us for doing this these days. But good luck to your Sox. I hope it's a great series.
I hope it's a great series, too. Good luck to your Cardinals. See?
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, exactly. Of course, this is the way. It's the Cardinal way.
Yeah.
That was my evil troll laugh.
That was good. That was good.
But good luck. And I'll, it's weird. I guess I'll see you on the other side.
That's right. Yeah, we'll go through the dark portal and we'll see where the light is.
Exactly. Anyway, mystic portal awaits. All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. That does it for the Over the Monster podcast, and we'll be back next week.